Hi, it's Shayna here. Before this episode starts, I'm popping in with a quick reminder about our upcoming CEU on Thursday, May 16th, on a person-centered approach to behavior management. School taught us a lot about ABA. However, the thing with ABA is that it's a science and it's constantly evolving. So a lot of what we learned back then doesn't always apply now. Today, we want to use a person-centered approach to behavior management. But what does that look like, and how can our learners still make progress in this kind of approach? So join us live on Thursday, May 16th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time as Shira discusses how to use a person-centered approach to behavior management with your learners. This CEU is presented by our very own Shira Karpal. You can earn one learning CEU for ACE, QABA, or IBAO. Join us live at this event, or to watch the recording asynchronously, go to howtoaba.com/CEU. See you then.
Hi, I'm Shira Karpal.
And I'm Shayna Gaunt, and we're board certified behavior analysts. At How2ABA, we provide practical resources, community, and support to ABA professionals. In each episode of our podcast, we will be having real conversations with real people sharing real stories about ABA.
We'll share relevant strategies and actionable tips that will make us all better ABA practitioners. It's the ABA content you need that you're not going to learn in a textbook.
Today, we're discussing what different types of reinforcement you can use and how to use reinforcement properly.
So reinforcement is one of our most common tools, but sometimes the feedback I get is it's not working. And there's a student who's really struggling in the classroom and the teacher's saying the reinforcement system doesn't work. So then I start asking some questions. I'm like, well, how often is this reinforcement available? And they're like, you know, about once a week or so. And I said, well, what does the reinforcement system look like? They're like, well, you know, he can earn time on the computer at the end of the week. And I said, and how often did he ever get that time on the computer? And they're like, never. See, it doesn't work. The reinforcement system isn't working. And my response is, well, of course it's not working. He's never accessed that reinforcement. And the mistake is in the system. It's not in the child. And if reinforcement is not set up properly to make the individuals or the clients successful, then of course it's not going to work. So let's talk about how to make reinforcement actually work.
You got it. So let's look at what reinforcement is in the first place. So if you actually go back to the definition of reinforcement, you know, remember that Cooper, Heron, Heward textbook that we all had to learn? The definition of reinforcement is really using some type of preferred item or preferred activity to increase the future likelihood of desired behaviors. So we're not looking at, oh, this child did this, so I did this. How come he's not doing it? Well, that's not reinforcement. Reinforcement is only reinforcement if it increases future likelihood of desired behavior.
So we just put out there that now I can't even hear someone use the term negative reinforcement in the wrong way without cringing, because that's all I notice is they think negative reinforcement is something bad happens and positive reinforcement is something good happens.
So reinforcement is just increasing future likelihood of behavior. So if it's positive reinforcement, we're adding something in to increase that future likelihood of behavior. So for instance, if I go, yeah, great job, I'm adding in that praise. And if, and only if, the child increases their behavior based on my praise, that's reinforcement. Have you ever had a child who you praise and they stop doing it? So for instance, I can be over the top in my praise sometimes, and sometimes with kids who don't like loud noises, et cetera, it scares them. So, you know, they do something like they're doing a shape sorter and they put the circle in the circle. I go, wow, yeah, great job. And they jump and they look at me and they put the shape sorter down and they run away and they don't want to ever do it again. That's not reinforcement. My praise didn't work. It didn't increase the future likelihood of a desired behavior. However, if, you know, they put the circle in the circle and, you know, I said, yeah, great job, and they looked at me and they continued to do it because maybe they wanted more praise, my praise would function as a reinforcement. Now, negative reinforcement, Shira, your favorite term. If positive reinforcement is simply adding something in order to increase future likelihood of behavior, negative reinforcement means taking it away. So taking away something to increase future likelihood of behavior. So let's give an example of that. So if I take something away, like I take away a loud noise of an alarm clock, that increases the future likelihood that I'm going to press on that button, that snooze button, or maybe the okay, turn it off button, faster and faster each time I hear my alarm.
Yeah. So reinforcement is really only reinforcement if it changes behavior in the future. And that's an important thing to remember because it often gets confused with prizes, rewards, stickers, bribes. And we kind of lump that all into what we call reinforcement. But it's not technically reinforcement if it doesn't change behavior. And what we're looking at is the behavior. That's the key, right? We're looking at reinforcing a behavior, not an individual. So, you know, you can give a child as many prizes and stickers and rewards, but if it's not reinforcing the behavior, no matter what you're giving to that child, is not going to change their behavior. So we want to talk about reinforcing the behavior because that's what we're looking at changing and not the individual.
Some people say, oh, I'm going to reinforce Sally for making whatever, making her bed every morning. Well, you're not reinforcing Sally. You're reinforcing the behavior of making the bed. So if I reinforce Sally, it technically means I'm trying to increase the future likelihood that Sally is going to occur in the future. Doesn't make sense. So just like Shira, when you cringe when you hear the term negative reinforcement used incorrectly, I actually cringe when I hear, well, I reinforce so-and-so's behavior. Or, sorry, I reinforce so-and-so instead of saying I reinforce so-and-so's behavior.
And reinforcement can really be as simple or as creative or as basic as you want. So we typically think of reinforcement as being, you know, something edible, like a snack, a cookie, a chocolate. And you know what? Those are my preferred reinforcers. I'd be happy to do the dishes if I knew I could get chocolate after. But not everybody prefers edibles as reinforcers, and that's fine. You can use lots of things. You can use video games. You can use prizes, toys, books, but the important thing is that it has to be preferred to that individual. Reinforcement is individualized. And if we're not tapping into what's motivating for that individual, then it's not going to be reinforcement. And sometimes we have to be a little bit creative. And we often hear stories of, you know, people asking, well, you know, all the child wants to do is line up their cars. So what reinforcer could I use to get them to stop lining up their cars, for example? And I'm thinking like, but that's their preferred activity. Let them line up their cars, use it as a reinforcement, make it more fun. And so not trying to think, you know, what can I add to this situation necessarily to get them interested in something else, but use what they're interested in. If they really like being like rough and you know, all that like physical, like running and jumping and squeezing, then use that. That's a preferred activity. It doesn't have to be something that you can add jelly bean or a good job. It could be something super silly, like making a silly noise or, you know, doing something funny or giving them like you throwing them in the air and being really physical. It could be any one of those things. The important thing is that it needs to be motivating to them. So, you know, start thinking about what are they really into and look at them for that answer and start to use their interests towards maybe I can make that even better. So if a kid really likes squishes and, you know, they'll sometimes like lean up against you to get that pressure, then maybe I'll get the funnest blanket and I'll roll them up in a blanket and we'll play this really silly game where they get all that squish and pressure from that blanket. So I could take what they're really into and I can make it even better and then use that as reinforcement.
The other thing that you can use as reinforcement that is such a simple concept is you. Right. So we talk about, you know, when you're initially, you know, starting an ABA program with a student, you're pairing yourself with reinforcement. Well, if you're pairing yourself with reinforcement, it means you're the deliverer of good things until eventually you're just the good thing. So, you know, a good therapist isn't just going through the motions of, okay, I'm giving my instruction. Okay, the student responds. Okay, I'm going to do something that's going to try and increase the likelihood of their behavior or give them some activity. It can be, hey, it's me. Look, let's play together. Let's be fun together. So it's not about, I'm going to give the SD and you're going to do this. I'm going to give you something and I'm going to take my data. It can be, hey, I give the SD, you know, you get it correct and I'm going to give you some tickles or we'll play this together or we'll do this really fun thing or I've got this spinny toy or, you know, I know you like shoulder squeezes or hand massages. Continue with that. You're the deliverer of good things. Continue being their favorite.
And one of the things that I notice about, you know, a common error in using reinforcement, and totally not intentional, but when things are good, we kind of forget to reinforce the good things because everything's calm and, you know, the kids are doing what they need to be doing and you forget to notice the good things, right? And then what happens is it starts to get a little bit rocky and, you know, kids start to melt down or they start to do things that they're not supposed to be doing. And what happens? Those reinforcement systems come out. And I'll often notice it. Well-meaning people might notice, you know, a child having a meltdown in the hallway. And what happens? They'll come up with, do you want the iPad? Do you want a cookie? Do you want the gym? Do you want this? Do you want that? And all of a sudden, all the good stuff come out. And that's actually not the right way to use reinforcement, because what you're actually reinforcing is the behavior that's happening right now, which is the meltdown. So if all the good things start coming out in the moment of the meltdown, you're really reinforcing the meltdown. And what we want to do is have the reinforcement come out for the behaviors that we want to see more of. So there are a lot of other ways to get a child out of a meltdown that do not involve bringing out all of those reinforcers. One of those things is reinforcement should happen throughout. It shouldn't just be something that happens during the difficult moments. It should be something that happens more often during the good times, so that when there's a challenging time, you have what to rely on because they're already used to that system. So you can remind them of what's in it for them. You can remind them of what's available, but it's not in that moment that you're coming up with all the most fun activities because they're in a challenging moment.
And that's really the difference between a reinforcement and a bribe. And people will say, oh, isn't reinforcement just bribery? And the key difference is exactly that, Shira, is exactly bringing out the fun stuff when negative behavior happens. That's bribery. Reinforcement is having the fun stuff already happening before the negative behavior occurs. So the difference between reinforcement and bribery is really just timing. So, you know, with reinforcement, you're offering that reinforcement or that special activity preferred item ahead of time before any type of behavior is occurring. With bribery, it's really about, you know, in the moment, I'm going, oh no, I don't know what to do. How do I handle this, you know, situation? All right, I'm pulling out all the stops now. That's bribery. And that actually is detrimental because, like Shira said, that's actually increasing negative behavior instead of increasing positive behavior.
And if there's one thing that I wish we could do as behavior analysts is to dispel this myth that bribery is the same thing as reinforcement, because I hear it so often. And we don't advocate for bribery, but we do for reinforcement. The other important thing to remember is that reinforcement to be effective really needs to be contingent. And what does contingent mean? It means that it only happens when the individual or the student or client is showing that behavior. So that means that if you're offering reinforcement for cleaning up your room, you only get that reinforcement when you clean up your room. It's contingent on you cleaning up your room. So the same thing, if they're getting a token every time they transition independently, then it is that token or that secondary reinforcement is contingent on the independent transition, right? So you're not offering it when they transition not independently or they don't clean up their room. And one of the other common mistakes we make is that, you know, when doing an ABA program or teaching, sometimes the therapist will lose sight of that contingency. And so sometimes it just becomes, well, this program is over, so you get a token, or, you know, you've said some sort of response, so you get a token. But then, well, what's motivating them to say the correct response, or what's motivating them to do it, to put an effort? And so being really clear on what those contingencies are for the token, because sometimes if, you know, you're prompting them through a response because they got it wrong, which is fine, we could teach, but then they shouldn't be receiving reinforcement for that if the goal is that they can do it independently. So if they give an incorrect response, you know, you ask them, what is this? And it's the answer is a circle, and they say a square, and you say, no, it's a circle. And then you give them a token. What's motivating them next time to get it right the first time, if that reinforcement is not contingent on the correct response? So being very clear about what those contingencies are and when they get reinforcement, is it based on correct responding? Is it based on effort? Is it based on attending? And making that clear both to the student, to the therapist, and to everyone involved, so that you can really strongly pair that reinforcement and the behavior, because the more strongly that they're paired, the more likely it is to work. You know, if reinforcement is not paired with that behavior, then how is the individual supposed to make that connection? So we need to pair that really, really strongly. We also pair it with time. It should happen right as immediate as possible after that behavior. So if if I gave my child a dollar every time they clean their room, and they clean their room and they come to me and they said, "I cleaned my room," and 3 hours later, I said, "Oh, great job. Here's your dollar." I'm not pairing that behavior strongly enough with the reinforcement. So you want it to be as immediate as possible. So they finish cleaning their room and right away, I notice and I praise them and I give them that dollar. And so pairing those two more strongly is going to make that contingency even stronger.
Oftentimes, I'll look at data sheets and, in specific programs, if data aren't moving, I really want to see the program itself. Sometimes, I'm looking at a data sheet and data aren't moving, I can give some suggestions, but it's really about watching the therapy session itself. And I've always been told if a student can't learn, it's not about the student. You've got to change the way you teach. And, that contingent versus non-contingent piece of reinforcement is usually the case, and or it's a timing issue. So I'll watch the teaching interaction. And oftentimes I'll find that either a therapist is just going through the motions and, giving them something that they don't really want. So that's not reinforcement, but they're, giving them some type of item that, okay. Or they really do have that really well-intentioned meaning and they're giving them something they want, but they're not making that contingent upon the response. So like Shira said, if you say, touch red and they touch some other color, and then you correct them and say, this is touching red, and then you give them that reinforcement, but it's not reinforcement because it's not increasing behavior, but you give them some type of preferred item, then what are you really reinforcing? You're basically saying, okay, you go through the motions and you get your tokens anyway. And I get these kids who become really complacent because they're just like, yeah, I'll just sit back. Time's going to pass anyway. If I don't respond, not a big deal. I'll still get all my tokens. Programs will finish and then I'll get to play. I'll get to do fun stuff. And that's not really what we want. We want our students to be active participants. We want our students to really want, what they're quote unquote working for. So it's about, no, touch red. Okay. You didn't touch red. This is the red one. Let me follow up. Now try again. Touch red. Maybe you would need to help them through it. But if they touch red, that's when they get that reinforcement. So touch red equals reinforcement, nothing else. So really making sure that that's clear with your instructors. I guess that brings us to our next point of differential reinforcement.
So differential reinforcement is just sometimes you get a little bit of reinforcement and sometimes you get a lot of reinforcement, the behavior gets a lot of reinforcement. It's different. The reinforcement changes depending on the response. So for example, if I'm teaching manding to a young child and they're just learning, they're an early learner and we want them to request for something. And, I have this really cool spinning toy and I want them to say spin. So they're just learning and they're not really able to say spin, but if they say then I might give them a little bit of it. I might spin it a little bit. And as soon as they're giving me more of a response and they're making more of an effort more independently, I am going to increase that reinforcement. So if I have to help them and I'm modeling and I'm saying s-s-s, and then they copy me, I'll reinforce that response. That's amazing. They're imitating, they're echoing, they're making that effort and that should be reinforced. So we'll give them a little bit of it. And as soon as they can do it more independently, maybe without my model, or maybe they could say spin or some longer effort, then they may get a longer turn with it. Or I might, also do something more exciting or more fun. So that reinforcement changes based on the response.
And that's really differential reinforcement. People talk about differential reinforcement out of the text, out of a page in a textbook, like, well, but there's a DRO and there's a DRA and a DRI and a DR this and a DR that. Absolutely. There's a whole bunch of ways that you can differentially reinforce for incompatible behavior, other behavior, alternative behavior. But really for this purpose, for the purposes of teaching, just really think that differential reinforcement is giving a lot of something for a really great job and giving a little bit for a good try. And that would be what I would call differential reinforcement.
I like to call it, A for effort. You get a little bit of reward just for trying, because that's all we can really ask, you know, our clients and our students to do. And they shouldn't get nothing for trying. Like, we're all learning. So giving them a little bit of that reinforcement just for trying. And we also refer to tokens versus edibles and toys and things like that. And I wanted to touch upon another kind of common misconception, is that not understanding when to put those tokens in or what the toys are for. And one of the reasons that, you know, one of the questions I get about reinforcement systems not working is often because they're using tokens and those aren't motivating or reinforcing. And what's important to understand is that we all have what we call primary reinforcers. So they're things that we just like. And those are the things that we were referring to about edibles, snacks, toys, drinks, computers, things that we're interested in. You don't have to teach me to enjoy chocolate. I will like chocolate. You just have to present it and it will reinforce any behavior that you want. But tokens or pom-poms or marbles, I'm not really so interested in them. And they wouldn't change the likelihood of any of my future behavior if you offer me a marble or a pom-pom or a token. Sorry. You know, often you can say to me, if you get 5 marbles at the end of that, you'll get chocolate. I could probably understand that and that might work. But for a lot of our younger students or newer students, they don't understand that. They don't understand that concept of delayed reinforcer. The only way for those tokens, marbles, or pom-poms to become reinforcing is for us, for them to become a secondary reinforcer, which means they've been paired enough with a primary reinforcer that those items themselves become reinforcing. And so we often recommend starting with primary reinforcers and working on that and getting some momentum so that they have that concept of that first then contingency with reinforcement, and only then starting to fade in those secondary reinforcers, not quickly and not, you know, all or nothing. There's a very slow process into shaping that where they they're paired enough with the primary reinforcers. And sometimes you have to do that a couple times and take it a step back so that you repair them together. But not assuming that those tokens, stickers, marbles, pom-poms are going to become primary reinforcers just because you're offering the promise of something at the end of that. And so that's another common misconception about those reinforcement systems.
So Shira, if you're working for marbles, does that mean that you don't have all your marbles yet? Your marbles? I think I've lost my marbles certain days. I think the last thing I really want to touch on is just teaching staff about reinforcement, because, you know, we know reinforcement and I think I know reinforcement like the back of my hand, but when I'm teaching somebody else about reinforcement, it can be tough. Sometimes I see staff members use the exact same items as, you know, trying to use them as reinforcers for every single student. And that doesn't work either. So sometimes what I'll do is a really quick staff training game of would you rather. Has anybody heard of would you rather, or even the game this or that, what you prefer this or that? And I'll do things like, would you rather have a bath or would you rather have a shower? And I'm all in the shower camp. Now, other people are all in the bath camp. Now, if someone said, hey, Shayna, if you can do this and then you can take a bath, no way, not doing it. It's disgusting. I'm bathing in dirty water. No thanks. Whereas other people are like, oh, taking a shower. No, I'd rather take a bath because the shower is just too hard on my skin. Right. So would you rather have red wine or white wine? Would you rather have, you know, Coke or Sprite? Would you rather have, this or that, basically, and going through a bunch of would you rather scenarios and then talking about it as a team and going, oh, wow, imagine people like different things, Shira. Can you imagine? And then relating that to your students.
So now that you know all of our pet peeves about reinforcement, which we've explained, also understanding how reinforcement works, really what is reinforcement, the importance of reinforcing the behavior and not the child. We talked about, you know, common mistakes made with reinforcement and how to fix those mistakes. Most importantly, the reinforcement versus bribery misconception, how to make your reinforcement contingent on the behaviors that you want to see more of in the future, and what differential reinforcement is.
So click on the link on or around this video to get your free reinforcement checklist.
Thanks for joining today's conversation. Wherever you get your podcast, please go and subscribe, rate and review so others can find out about us too.
For more from How to ABA, including free resources and ABA materials, visit our blog at howtoaba.com. and make sure that you're following us on social media for more practical tips and updates.